team. Imagine combining expertise in engineering, advanced analytics, and human-computer interaction with a passion for making learning joyful and engaging for children. That's the incredible path of today's guest, Dr. Mona Harate, the co-founder of JoySchooler. Thanks for checking us out on the Traveling Principal Show, where we dive into innovative ideas and inspiring journeys in education. I am your host, Joe Clausi, and today I'm thrilled to be bringing to you this interview with Dr. Mona Harate. Please enjoy. Mona's story is fascinating, as the work she's doing now is just exactly what I've been looking for on the Traveling Principal Show. She graduated from the University of Tehran in Iran with a degree in electrical and computer engineering. Her academic journey has brought her to Canada, of all places, one of my favorites, where she studied visual analytics and human-computer interactions at Simon Fraser University. She holds a PhD from the University of British Columbia, specializing in human-computer interactions, and her work has helped her bridge the gap between technology and human experiences. But today, we're here to talk to her about her latest venture, JoySchooler, a platform dedicated to reimagining learning as a joyful and engaging experience for children. Mona, welcome to the Traveling Principal Show. It's a pleasure to have you here with us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So your background is incredible. You've studied in such diverse fields and areas in the world, from engineering to human-computer interactions. So I want to just begin with you from the very beginning and start firing away questions. Are you okay with that?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so let's get started, because there's one that I realized I did not include, and so I'm going to throw you a bit of a curveball. Tell me what human-computer interactions would be as a major and study. Like, what is that? I'm so curious.
Sure, yeah. So basically, it's an interdisciplinary field, like in an intersection between computer science, psychology, behavioral science, and design. And the goal is to kind of design and study basically human behavior and design interfaces that support those behaviors in a way that interface becomes seamless. So a well-designed, for example, user interface becomes invisible to users. Great designers do that because they know, for example, like how the human eyes work, basically the psychology, the needs of the users, given the application. In human-computer interaction, basically the research deals with, for example, picking a specific behavior. For example, I worked around task management for my thesis. Okay. And then you study how people are doing it. And how we can design tools that better support this behavior. So basically, you are free to choose whatever basically area you want to study, and you read about like the psychology of that area, and also at the same time use your computer science background to build something.
Mona, I missed my calling. That is so interesting. Are you kidding? So you chose the way people organize themselves with computer use, and that was like a pathway that you just kind of dove deep into and tried to figure out how to better that experience?
Yeah, task management specifically, and my focus was on personalization and we realized that, I know it's not the focus of the interview, so we realized that basically like people have all these different ways of managing tasks, and usually task management tools are pretty rigid as to how things should be done, and that's part of the reason that people are basically switching so fast between tools, because they don't find the fit. But like for example, my focus was how we can actually design these technologies so adaptable that people can actually change to their liking whatever aspects of the tool they need to. So
I love it. I love the ability to be able to interact and personalize So thanks for that curveball answer. Let's just start from the very beginning. So what inspired you to start Joy Schooler, and what is like the core mission of the platform?
Sure. So the core mission of the platform is to make learning deep and meaningful, and help with developing curious lifelong learners who are able to think on their own and solve problems on their own. And the way we do that is actually inspired, is inspired by my experience. So, and my inspiration comes from watching my own kids learn.
Awesome.
So basically I was amazed by the power of interests, like kids' interests and curiosities, and to what extent that drives meaningful and deep learning, as opposed to just something that I could randomly give them to learn. So basically that kind of set me off on that path, to see how we can actually better support interest-based, curiosity-driven learning, because that really actually leads to deep and meaningful learning. Students connect with it, and it leads to deeper learning. And it needed a lot of support. At the time that I started, basically, as a parent who works full time, I needed, it was time consuming to find educational resources that are quality and relevant.
Okay.
And actually Joy Schooler started with that. So, as a basically collection of curated resources and a search engine that, parents could use to, just search for their kids' interests and find quality resources. And then later it evolved into what it is now, supporting more discovery-based learning. And that also kind of was inspired, again, by my experience with the kids. I found myself, initially it was easy to engage with my kids' questions in a way that I basically try to help them engage and think about their questions, as opposed to just giving them an answer.
Age group are you talking about with your own kids, Mona?
They are 9 and 5. Yeah.
Okay. So right about the time when the cognitive switch is flipped from your basic recall and retelling to a little bit more thought provoking, a little bit more engaging responses, a little bit more of a almost like an intrinsic connection with what they're learning and why they have to learn it?
Yeah. Okay. So I would say actually, the interest-based learning started from age one, basically, right. From the time that they start to, and earlier. So basically, they show lots of interests in the things that they love. And if we just build on that and try to teach them anything that is relevant to that, they're just so open and accepting of the experience.
Willing, right? I hear you. And it kind of brings me perfectly into my next question, because you talk about joyful learning. Why is it important for children in today's educational landscape to experience joyful learning?
So basically joyful learning is any form of learning that the kids' interest and curiosity has a role in it, is driving the learning. I would say that becomes a joyful experience, right? And I feel like in today's landscape, joyful learning kind of nurtures some of these traits that are super important, like curiosity and being able to actually delve deep into one's interests. And so these are pretty important. I feel like they're nurtured with this kind of learning. If we keep learning the things that we are not interested, we never learn how to actually go after our interests and dig deep and make a meaningful contribution.
So true. Yeah. What does this look like in schools?
So basically being able to I would say not having a rigid curriculum,
okay,
like respecting like every individual student as by seeing their interests and what they're curious about,
mm-hmm.
Giving them like agency for choosing what they want to learn, what they want to work on. I mean, if for example, school is too far from giving agency to the student as to what they want to learn, at least they can give them choices that how they want to, like what project they want to work on or what kind of, like in assignments, give them choices. And to the extent possible, like bringing kids' interests and what they're curious about into the game.
Yeah.
And what else in the schools?
Have you ever heard of an open classroom? That was like a US trend in education where it was very standards based. And so the standards drove what should be learned, but how students learn it was really up to the student. It was all interest-based.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
No, I haven't. Did it become mainstream or?
So it did. It tried. It gave it a good push. There were a couple of schools, like for example, where I live now, there's one school, I think it was a kindergarten to eighth grade school. Mm-hmm. They call it the open classroom setting. But the parents didn't really buy into it. It's a tough pill for any parent to swallow when kids in the US still have to take standardized assessments, and based on those scores, mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get all kinds of different outcomes. That when you have an open classroom setting that doesn't create like a bar for each age prior to progression, it, you know, the two just aren't aligned very
exactly.
Well. So
yeah.
The US just didn't and then parents started to kind of say like, well, what is the point of this? I mean, my kid loves learning, but they don't seem to be aligned with mm-hmm. the pace that the US has set for students. And so, you know, this brings me to another question. What are some of the biggest challenges parents and educators face when trying to create this joyful learning experience? And then how would Joy Schooler help address that?
Mm-hmm. So I think it's hard to basically do these things that I mentioned, especially in a classroom. Mm-hmm. Like when you have 20 students, how do you want to basically adapt to individuals' needs, interests, what they're curious about? And at the same time, go based on a curriculum prepare for a standardized test. Because some stuff, just as you said, don't align together. Like, for example, one thing that, like with Joy Schooler, basically, we try to see what the student is interested in. Mm-hmm. And like, if there's something that they need to learn, at least giving them an opportunity to engage in a one-on-one, you know, deep conversation, because that's also not a possibility in the classroom, right?
Yeah.
So I know lots of teachers would have loved to have the opportunity to be able to engage in one-on-one with each student, given their levels and interests,
mm-hmm.
But it's just in a classroom settings not quite possible. So, yeah. Like, for example, I would say instead of asking a question to the class, if you, for example, use a tool like Joy Schooler and give students like a 5 or 10 minute opportunity for each of them to actually individually think through the question, that will allow them to fill any gaps they have, to go down deep and basically be more prepared for whatever lesson they're about to start. Mm-hmm. And because this AI is also aware of the student's interest, I mean, as the student has entered, so it's possible to actually for it to bring up relevant examples that are more meaningful to the students.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a tool in teachers' hands to use to be able to basically create a little bit of more personalization in their teaching. And like basically, yeah, allowing students to time to go deep and fill the gaps they have. Yeah.
I'm enamored by the notion of this program. I feel like it's a missing recipe in what determines success in schools, a connection that a student has to make with what they're learning, because gone are the days where kids just have to learn, right? We've seen that. And so I'm stoked that schools are starting to embrace this. What might be some key strategies or techniques that parents can use to foster this love of learning, but at home?
So it's, you know, parenting, we all know that it's kids don't pay much attention to what you say most of the time as much as what you do. So I feel like parenting is all about modeling the behavior, like attitude or the love of learning that you want to see in the kids, in your kids. And hopefully they'll pick up. Like, for example, like as a parent, spending time on learning what you really love would actually be a nice model. Like, for example, when your kids ask a question, like how you engaged with their questions, do you just give away the answer, or you actually engage them in a conversation, helping them like, or model them the kind of thinking that they can go through? So they know that when somebody asks them a question, they're not supposed to have the answer right away. They can take their time and think through it. That's something that we are trying to do with Joy Schooler, knowing that not a lot of parents have the time to actually spend with their kids through their many questions. It's nice to be able to have this conversation with your parents, but if not, for example, like I would say, sometimes I don't know enough about the thing that my kid is asking, so I would just send them to Joy Schooler. Say, okay, how about, you know, have a conversation with this bot?
Awesome.
It's much better than saying, I mean, before having this, I would just say, okay, let's go together, ask Google.
Right.
Let's Google it, right? And Google would give us a quick answer and like a snippet on top of the search results, and we would basically, we were good with that, but like 2 days later, we didn't know what we learned, right? And we know that learning, you know, most of the time is a consequence of thinking, so if we don't spend the time, we don't learn deeper.
Learning is the consequence of thinking.
Yeah. Ooh,
I love it.
Yeah, that phrase, I read it in a book. I don't have it. It's from David Perkins. So it's the author of Whole Learning. Designing letting students play the whole games instead of, like, for example, not like if you're teaching math, why this concept is helpful. Okay. So what are the kinds of things you can do with that concept? So
why are we learning what we're, right? Like, oh my gosh, you are speaking my language, Mona. This is great. So how can schools and educators integrate the principles of Joy Schooler into a more traditional educational setting or model that exists in almost every school in the US?
Even with the traditional model of learning, so basically using Joy Schooler to give students a more one-on-one time would help a lot. Like meeting them at their level is something that is hard for the teachers to do in the classroom. So that can be a help to them, so that they can basically engage kids through their interests with whatever they are learning in the class, to basically meet them at where they are and go up from their level. So it can be used like for formative assessments to give teachers a sense of where the class is, giving a summary of, like, after giving like time to students to think through like a question in the beginning of the lesson, you can quickly have a summary of where the students are, what are their strengths and areas that they need to work on, and maybe adapt your lesson based on their responses. And also,
wow,
yeah,
that's very interesting there. You just checked like every box in a teacher's need to gauge formatively in a live setting the comprehension levels of the entire class.
Right. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow,
and then,
that's interesting.
Yeah, and for basically assignments and even summative assessments, I feel like, for example, oral exams are the best form of exams because in terms of basically letting the teacher know how the students is thinking, right? They just don't get the final answer. They get insights into the students' thinking. And at the same time, there's opportunity for the teacher to give feedback, right? In such an exam, and there's no pressure of grades and things like that. So I feel like ideally it would be great if you could move away from like stressful grade-based evaluation toward more helpful forms of evaluation that in which the goal is to give feedback and get insight into how the student is thinking and how we can help the student to better think. And I feel like, for example, Joy Schooler can be used with, I mean, it's really hard for teachers to spend the time to do that kind of evaluation, like having oral exams with like 20 students in the class is hard,
yeah.
But like we could use a tool like Joy Schooler to perform such an evaluation. And then even like the teacher can see the conversation along with the AI feedback on the conversation as to how the student thought and what are their understanding with respect to this question, for example.
So what I'm hearing you say is that a lot of times schools are struggling with how can we purposely use AI in the classroom? And you're saying you guys have figured that out and have created a way to track AI searches for individual students that really conduct this deep level connecting learning process for the students, and everything is observable by the teacher.
Yeah, basically teacher can post the question. So when students are responding to the question, we don't expect a final, I mean, the student can give a final answer and be done with it, right? But if their answer is not covering some of the points that the teacher wanted to cover, so they can continue the conversation. The bots will ask, okay, how do you think about this aspect? What do you think? Like, what do you think this, how do you think this would work? What are the applications of this? And basically the conversations can go deep and giving more insight into like where the student is exactly. So they might have memorized an answer to a question, right? But like engaging them in a conversation will actually like reveal the level of understanding in a more meaningful way that's makes it easier to basically give feedback, and basically it's just a more genuine way of knowing where the student is, which is the most valuable goal of evaluation and assessment, I think.
100%. I mean, it's I'm really digging what you guys are doing, and I feel like it's answering a major question that a lot of educators have, which is AI is great, but how does it benefit the learning in my classroom? Mm-hmm. In addition, you're just totally speaking the language of the Traveling Principal Show with regards to intrinsic connections for students, and not in so many words, but what you're saying is memorizing is only really good in the short term. Enduring the information is going to make it valuable to strengthen schema to be able to learn anything new moving forward. And Let me ask you this one, because I have to ask this. What advice would you give to parents or teachers dealing with children who are resistant to learning and seem disengaged? Because I see this everywhere in the US, and we call this like, oh, kids are different post-pandemic. What kind of advice would you give them with regards to those who are just resistant to or just seem disengaged to try to reconnect that learning?
Yeah. So basically, I would say resistance. I mean, we need to first figure out why there is a resistance and what they're resisting to. So it's basically mostly a signal for us to figure out what's going on, a signal that tries to communicate that something is going wrong. It could be, I mean, there can be various things behind resistance. It can be lack of connection to like students' interests and life. It could be like poor relationship between teacher and student or parent and student. It could be like at certain age, it could be like peer pressure and social influence. Like, for example, if my peers are not valuing learning or academic achievements, I tend to adjust to that, right? I also don't value and become resistant to learning. So you may need to actually change the group in which the student is learning. It could be like, I don't know, stress and anxiety, and where they can't just focus on the thing that they're learning. So, I mean, again, the irrelevance of the material to their levels. What else? Like sometimes the like oversimplicity of the material and repetitive nature of the things that are taught at school can disengage.
I think there's
a lot of studies showing like basically what causes disengagement and resistance. And there are a lot of causes. You just need to dig and figure out what is causing it and what we can do about it. I mean, there are great solutions to each of these. But I mean, like, for example, from my own experience with my kids, I mean, I've experienced basically a lot of these resistance. And I've always seen them as signals that, okay, there's something wrong in what we're doing. What can we do? And I've basically accepted that I can't like ask my kids to learn something they're not interested in. It's that's basically granted.
Yeah.
Because I've seen, maybe implicitly, I've seen a resistance when I offer something to them that it's not necessarily related to, because, like, I mean, as parents, my job is, our job is to basically expose our kids to various experiences and see where they pick up. I mean, that's like basically part of how new interests can develop.
Absolutely.
So basically it's a tricky balance between exposing and to figure out if they are interested and like, or asking explicitly that then you need to learn about this thing. So,
yeah.
And I've seen like resistance to the second one in some cases that was not yet an interest or far from existing interest. Some kids might be more okay with things not being squarely related to their interests and some not. So, yeah.
Interesting. I mean, I feel like a natural learner is going to learn anything regardless of the topic, but a disengaged learner needs to be re-engaged. And usually that's best done by putting something in front of them that they familiarize with or associate positively with. Mm-hmm. And usually that's something that they like, something that they're interested in. And Joy Schooler offers such a nice connection, like almost like a bridge from where they are to where they want to go. But with using the same content. So it's, I'm digging this. I'm wondering, can you share a success story or some sort of a transformative experience whether it be from family or an educator who've embraced Joy Schooler's methods.
Sure. But before going there, I actually wanted to follow up with what you said about natural learner.
Okay.
So how do you define that?
What's that?
How do you define natural learner?
So it's interesting. That's a great question. I mean, I have two kids as well. One that's 10, one that's 8. And in a parent teacher conference yesterday, for my 8-year-old, the teacher actually taught both of my kids. So she's had my daughter 2 years ago, and now she has my son. And she was like, the kids go from primary to middle school next year, from elementary to middle. And so there's a program within the middle school that is a little bit academically advanced. Mm-hmm. And so my daughter is in that program. My son is on the cusp, you know. My daughter is a natural learner. If you put anything in front of her, she will just consume. She's like very curious. She could sit down and read books on levels that are far beyond, you know, her grade. And so the teacher, I said to her, do you think my son is going to be able to qualify for this program? And she was like, yes, absolutely. And I said, you know, he doesn't have the same learning curiosity and skill set that my daughter has. And she's like, no, I agree with you, but you know, he's the type of learner that if you put a group of kids in the same room, they're all going to go at different speeds. If your daughter was in the room, she'd be running the fastest. Your son would see who's running fast and go with them, but mm-hmm. he has the potential to stay and hang with the kids who might just be walking in the back and chilling. And so I was like, okay, I get it. You know, my daughter is just naturally going to learn. Mm-hmm. My son needs to be motivated. He needs to be engaged in it. And I don't think it's a boy-girl thing. I just think it's their mm-hmm. two dynamics and their characters and how they get down. And so when we're talking on the show about natural learners, it's a perfect example for you is if you have a teacher who's just going to come in a high school, let's say, and just start lecturing from the beginning. Take out your notebooks and let's just pick up where we left off yesterday. And they have their back to the class and they're putting information up and kids are supposed to know how to write it all down. They're supposed to be able to pay attention for the 50 minutes that the teacher is going to be lecturing. There may be minimal questions. The teacher's going to go at a fast pace because they have a lot that they need to get done. And the natural learner will sit there and write it all down and record it, even go home and study it on their own, even if they don't have to. There may not be a test tomorrow. They might just look over what they learned today. Mm-hmm. A non-natural learner in that class might sit there and zone out in the first 30 seconds. They might be a behavior issue. They might start to distract others around them. They certainly aren't going to take their notebooks out and just automatically start to work as hard as possible to mm-hmm. learn everything that's necessary. And that's where I'm kind of going with the difference between okay. the two.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's hard for me to like, I would like to believe that there's no such a thing as natural learning, meaning that everyone is, you know, at some
Absolutely.
Point,
everyone can.
They are, but what we do with them might cause some differences. Like, for example, I mean, just like every one of us basically we're engaged in this kind of joyful learning, are a natural learner in the first 4 and 5 years of our life before going to school, right? So we are learning some of the most difficult things, like talking and
reading.
And listening, understanding, reading, and walking. And these are not easy tasks, but we are motivated and like natural learners, and we do that. But along the way, I feel like something happens depending on like the environment. I mean, even like the two kids that in the same house, basically they have different experiences outside or they have different personalities, but and basically it caused someone to like tune out because I don't know, maybe they don't see like there's enough gap for them that they don't see how they can actually like engage in the class. I do hope that like basically if we could basically treat everyone as natural learner unless we actually did something. Something happened to them along the way that is kind of causing issues in their learning. But I think we will benefit from seeing everyone as a natural learner.
I love it. We absolutely would. I mean, I'd try to focus on the executive functions for both of my kids, mm-hmm. Which is what's necessary in order to learn anything.
Right, yeah.
And so I'm always trying to figure out this way to focus on enhancing their executive functions. Mm-hmm. So regardless to what grade or what's going on or how the teacher is teaching, mm-hmm. they can figure it out. Because that's, I think, the biggest discrepancy. And probably, I do agree with you, saying a natural learner assumes that the teaching that's being done is appropriately reaching every kid and giving each one of them an equal chance in order to have a fair shake at comprehension. And that is not happening.
Right, yeah.
And so we unfortunately label natural learners and non-natural learners. Mm-hmm. We've also labeled special ed, right? And when you think about it, why do we call kids, you know, we give them that tag of special education when they just learn in another way, you know? Yeah. We also call it our alternative, a different, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, we're label happy here. But it you know, I want to go back to that question.
Sure. Yes.
Give me some success stories that you've seen that have definitely, you know, JoySchooler has changed the game for the user.
Mm-hmm. So basically, JoySchooler in this form is pretty new. So basically, the schools that are using it right now, they basically started in September. But it's nice to actually already see some, like getting some feedback from students, like how it has actually, like we got some feedback from a few students that how it has actually already shaped how they try to think through the question, like even without using JoySchooler. So basically that shows that like the Socratic approach of the AI is actually like teaching them how to think through before reaching out for a quick answer, like on Google or something. And that's one thing. And the other encouraging thing that we have heard is that, so for example, at schools at this point, teachers are basically initiating most of the interactions with JoySchooler, asking mm-hmm. students to now like open your devices and go and brainstorm, for example, for your writing. Talk with this bot and brainstorm for your writing. But we are also seeing that it's really encouraging to see that students, even outside this context, like even without teachers asking them to use JoySchooler, they actually choose to use JoySchooler for their projects. Like I had a couple of students working on a project, and they said, we decided to actually use JoySchooler because we wanted to actually understand the thing that we were working on at a deeper level. So it was their choice to use it. And I mean, these are really encouraging to hear, because I feel like students have this resistance right now to thinking. To think mm-hmm. and spending time to think, because they're trained to, like, with our expectations of grades and like exams and all that stuff, we basically train them what we value is how quick you can give me an answer, a final answer, right?
Yeah, and absolutely.
It's really hard to like basically shift that mindset so that students are okay with spending time on thinking and struggling to get to an answer with their own effort. So if we basically like use something like JoySchooler to show that, you know, the way we evaluate your knowledge is through your efforts, and you know how long you're willing to actually think, and what kind of follow-up questions you ask, we value your curiosity and that kind of stuff. So we basically train for more valuable like things that we need, especially at this age.
Absolutely, you do. I love this. What kind of new, something exciting What's on the horizon for Joy Schooler? What's next? Tell me where you guys are going next.
Sure. So basically, as we work with schools, we would love to be able to support them in ways that works for them, as long as it comes to basically supporting deep learning and personalized learning. So we have, we are constantly working to improve that aspect of the work. But other than that, we also have some plans to for parents to be able to, because parents are, I feel like we all need more support in helping our kids. So like developing something that actually helps parents to rely on this as a resource for their kids, like something that we have in, we are working on it is like basically courses that are around kids' interests. Like, for example, let's say your child is deeply into paper airplanes. Now, how can we design like a discovery-based, inquiry-based course that guides the students like in understanding the science of paper airplanes, or how they can actually do like helping them do the experiments, do some experiments and getting them, you know, familiar to making hypotheses and doing experiments through their interests. So like that component is also part of something that we're working on.
Wow. So this is a lot more detailed than I originally was thinking when I went to the website and I messed around with it a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm comparing it to almost like a Khan Academy, but with Khan Academy, it limits you just to the curriculum that they offer. Whereas you guys, it seems like the world is the oyster of the student to mm-hmm. snack on, because there's no end of what can be searched, no category limit.
Right.
How can somebody find it? If I'm a principal or I'm in a school or I'm a teacher and I came up, how do I bring it into my program? Where can they find you and how do I bring it in?
Sure. So basically I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, and basically my email is also a great way to reach out. So mona@joyschooler.com is my email. I would love to hear from teachers and principals, how do you see basically this could help them?
Okay. Awesome. So you guys heard it here first. Mona, it's been such a pleasure to hear your journey and learn about Joy Schooler, because I'm always, you had said something before, the AI assists with a Socratic seminar, and I did it a couple of weeks ago, a 5-day piece on Socratic seminars.
Mm-hmm.
This could be a perfect add-on for any teacher at any grade level to conduct said operation while delivering instruction, whether it be a new information, whether it be a starter for a lesson, whether it be mm-hmm. a practical application activity that kids, and then share out appropriately. It really checks so many boxes. I'm super excited to have you on the show today and have everybody learn about what you guys are doing. Your work is truly inspiring. I'm sure our listeners are walking away with new ideas and motivations to make learning joyful and their lives in classrooms more exciting and engaging. And so your email one more time for the listener.
Sure. mona@joyschooler.com.
mona@joyschooler.com. You guys go check it out. I'm always trying to talk about what's next in education, and this is absolutely one of those things. So Mona, thank you.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
Team, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Mona Hardy from joyschooler.com and my new friend from up in the BC area. I already asked her if we could refer back to her expertise in that area moving forward, because human-computer interactions is definitely the way of the future. So email her at mona@joyschooler.com or email me, joe@travelprincipal.com. And I'll help you connect with her. She's just so awesome, so easy to talk with, and so knowledgeable. So thanks again to Mona for coming out and hanging on the show with us this week. And thanks to you guys for listening to this week's show. I hope that you see AI is not taking over, you guys. It's supporting what's already happening with learning, and in some cases, filling in what's missing as well. So try it.